Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
A Gal Media property. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, good morning, and thanks for joining us on Wake Up Call. Tony D, Ron Culver, and because it is another day that ends in Y, there's another proposal from the Major League Baseball owners to get the season started and up and running again. All right, so what is it this time? Well, this time it calls for a 76-game schedule and a 75% of the prorated salaries, which is 25% less than what the players want. This reminds me of a scene in Casino, right? Have you ever seen the Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, Martin Scorsese film about Las Vegas casinos? In that movie, they have a whale, a gambler, huge gambler, and he plays baccarat. He plays for $10,000 a hand. And he wins a lot of money, and he's going to leave. He takes the towels with him, and he goes to the plane, but the plane is broken, and it can't fly off. So he has to stay at the hotel until they can get a new plane, which will be the next day. But while he's back, he doesn't gamble the normal amount that he gambles. He gambles $1,000 a hand instead of $10,000 a hand. But as Robert De Niro's character points out in the talk over on the scene, is that eventually he has to up his bets because he never viewed winning 1,000 as winning 1,000. He looked at it as losing 9,000 because he normally bet 10 and now he's betting 9. So eventually he just comes back to the norm. This is what this reminds me of. When you talk about players who are looking at their money and then saying, well, look, every game I play, instead of looking at it as just money earned, I'm looking at it as money lost, right? When I should be getting X for playing a game, I'm going to be looking at it as missing out on Y. So every game that I play, I'm losing money. If the players wanted to make the $1.4 billion that is proposed on this new plan by the owners, they only have to play 57 games. So you can only imagine that the extra 21 games that are on the schedule are going to feel like extra bonus games to the players rather than games in which they're making significant money. This is a mess, but there's one part of the deal that's a breaker from the second they put it in, and I'll tell you what it is next. It is Wake Up Call, Tony D, Ron Culver.
You're listening to Wake Up Call. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad you could join us. It is Wake Up Call, SB Nation Radio. So again, going nowhere with the Major League Baseball Talks latest proposal, 76 games, 75% of the prorated salary. The players want 100% of their salary. It is increasing the amount of total compensation. $1.4 billion now is on the table. But they want to make sure that the postseason happens in the month of October. But here's the deal breaker. This deal is dead on arrival. This is not going to get approved by the union. It's not even close. It's not even a starting point because we had the starting point in, like, a few weeks ago, if not a month ago, when they were trying to put this all together. This is just the latest attempt by the owners to go, look, we're trying to salvage a season, America. We're trying. We're doing the best we can. Those guys over there, they're just not cooperating. But we're doing the best we can to give you Major League Baseball. And the players are saying, yeah, but, you know, we agreed that we would not be playing 162 games. But it still doesn't mean that you can't pay us what we are owed per game. We know we're going to be making less. We know we're not going to be taking home the same amount in 2020 as we did in 2019, but every time we take the field, we want the same amount of money that we are owed. You're going to be paying less. We're accepting less overall, but when we take the field, we don't want to take the field for less money. But here's the deal breaker. Here's the thing that's going to make this instantly voted against by the union. The owners of Major League Baseball have put a clause in this deal that says that players cannot sue the league or hold them liable if they get the coronavirus, if they can prove that they got coronavirus while playing baseball. Now, this is important for the union because while they can get coronavirus anywhere, they want to make sure that the owners are absolutely committed to safety. And they feel like the moment that there is no liability on the owner's part or Major League Baseball's part to the protection of the players, that that might slip. And also, here's the other thing. Because they're going to be taking less money in 2020, because they know they're not going to be playing all the games that are on the table, that they want to make sure that if they're taking all the risk, if they're taking all the health risk, right, that there's going to be some sort of give and take by the ownership group. Now, this is a mess because, again, this is what's, if you're a baseball fan, this has got to be really frustrating because the two sides aren't dealing in the same, they all want this, what's best for them, right? In any negotiation. But if you really want to get a deal done, you find out what the other side really is looking for so you can make some concessions, right? So you say, all right, I really don't want this, but I'm willing to take that if I get that, right? I'm willing to go that far if, you know, like, for example, if you're in these labor negotiations in sports, you're like, well, I'm commit. All right, we'll extend free agency this way if we can get this this early, that kind of thing. There's no conversation about that. The owners knew, and the owners know that the union is never going to go for a deal that takes liability off the table if they should contract coronavirus, if the safety measures that are in place for Major League Baseball are somehow laxed, right? If somehow they're not as up to par as they should be, right? Which this wouldn't allow. I mean, this is if you're the union, you have to be concerned about your player's safety. Forget all the finances. Player safety is going to be at the top of this, right? So again, if there is an issue of you know, letting, you know, not properly testing or whatever it is, there's got to be some liability here, and that's what the union wants. But this is all simple, right? Again, and I'm not siding with either one here because I think the union has to give some concessions too. If everybody wants to play, and it seems like everybody wants to play, there's got to be some give and take. But it sounds like if these two sides were in a room, this is basically how it would go. The owners would say, all right, how about 65% of your prorated pay? And the players would say, well, let's think. I don't know. How about 100? All right, how about 70? Okay, 70. That seems pretty good. All right, how about this? 100. How about 75? 75 sounds really good, but you know what sounds better? 100. That's what they're doing. This is what's going to happen the whole time. They'll go up to 80%. Nah, 100. How about 82? And still 100. And that's basically what this is going to be. There has been no movement on the union side of this. None. They have said, look, we want 100% and we want 114 games because why not? And the owners are going, yeah, here's the problem. Every game that we play without fans in attendance, we're losing 64,000 per game per team. And the union goes, ah, that's not true. And the owners go, yeah, that's true. And they go, no, it's not true. No, it's true. And this is what it is. This is like two sides that just don't believe each other. One side has absolutely got its foot in concrete into what it wants. The other side, the owners are like, and oh, by the way, let's put a clause in the contract guarantees it goes absolutely nowhere. So my question of the morning is, do they really want a deal or do they just want to show America that they're putting out a deal and letting America go, we don't hate you as much as we hate them. We hate you both, but we don't hate you as much as we hate them. That seems what it is. Why would you put a clause in the deal that you know the second it arrives on the union's desk, they go, no. Like, what made the owners think that the players were going to take this? It comes nowhere close to the money that they want. It's 25% less than what they're looking for on the money side. And, oh, by the way, liability is off the table. You can't sue us if you get coronavirus. If we do something that causes you to get coronavirus because we're not taking this seriously. It's silly. So we might have Rob Manfred is reportedly going to end up with like a 48-game schedule. And he's and that's it. He's going to be like, this is all we're going to have. That's it. I do know this. The owners are adamant about this. This is their sticking point in the sand. Concrete, I should say. That they don't want the postseason at all to go anywhere near November or December. So any of these like ideas of like, let's take the World Series to LA or let's take the World Series to Arizona where it's warm and have a neutral site tournament so we don't have to play in Boston when there's snow on the ground or New York. They're not going to do that. They are not going to do that. They're so worried of a second wave that's coming because they're listening to the doctors, listening to the epidemiologists, and they all believe that a second wave of the coronavirus is going to come back in the fall. All of this money, all of this they're trying to come up with, if you will, for the players is coming through postseason revenue. So they know that the cash cow really comes at the end. And so they are saying, look, we're going to protect that. All right. So we don't want November, some tournament in December because we extended the season so long. Because if we all go to Florida and there is coronavirus, well, we have to cancel. Now we have no income. And we promised you an amount of income because we're going to be locked into that. And we didn't make any money during the season with no fans in the stands. And two, we're not going to make any of the postseason money if we don't actually have a postseason to put on television. So they're like, look, whatever proposal you come up with, baseball, you know, union, you better make sure that this thing ends in September like it normally does. And we play in October like we normally do, or there's no deal. I said yesterday, and I'm going to even after getting all this news today, I said yesterday, I don't think there's going to be a season. And I'm not one of those Debbie Downers. I'm more of an optimist in these kind of things. I think in the end it gets done. I'm more, it looks to me like there's going to be no baseball. Now, again, I could be totally wrong because this could all be posturing. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, they're doing this.
But they're not.
They're
not doing this.
This thing has no chance.
Owners are throwing up fake proposals just to, I guess, what, look good?
That's what I'm thinking.
That's what it feels like. And the players are just going to keep shooting them down until they get what they want. And by the time they reach an agreement on a 114-game season, it's going to be September. And then realistically, everyone's going to look at it and go, you know, we can't do 114 games starting in September.
If you are a megastar securing your finances, why would you go with any – here's what the union could do. The union could say, look, we'll get a season. Here's what we'll do. But the stars won't play, right? Now, you would have to have some serious resolve. Like, if you're Mike Trout and you have all this goodwill, let's say, you're an ambassador to baseball. Would it be hard for me to see Mike Trout saying to America, I'm not playing because my, you know, the union compensation isn't – like, in the age of coronavirus, where we are suffering economically – Mike Trout doesn't want to take that PR hit, right? Like, I don't think Mike Trout would take that PR hit. But I can see a couple of others doing it. I can see a couple of others saying, no, I'm not going to do a 48-game, no liability season. No, I'm not doing that. No, I'm going to stay home. I'm going to sit out this year, do whatever I have to do. I'm not part of this. But it is going abs. The train to a season is stalled at the station because it ain't going anywhere. It is stopped. I mean, if I'm the union rep on this, I go, this is insulting. I mean, just insulting. This made no movement. It increased the revenue, but the concessions we have to give up to get that increase, I have no interest in this at all. None. If I'm the union, I go, all right, back to the drawing board. But again, the union doesn't make any movements either. The union has never come back and said, we'll take 90%. They go 100, and that's it. That's the starting point. That's the be-all, end-all. It's got to be 100.
I mean, there's got to be some give on their end, too, right?
Yeah, sure.
It's almost like they don't recognize or understand. I mean, first of all, it just seems like they don't care about their employer.
Right, but because they don't trust the employer. That's
because they
don't
trust the employer.
Right, that's the whole thing. I mean, if your employer is crying broke and you truly do not believe him or her, you would be cautious about any sort of plan that involves you making less money, right? But if you are really, if you really know the numbers and you really know the impact, right? Like, if you work at a sporting goods store and you really know that no one's coming in, right? And you're like, look, we got some inventory. No one's coming in. We can't move product. And now they want me to take a pay cut. I get it. But if you're being asked to take a pay cut and you're not 100% sure that the store is doing poorly, you'd probably be cautious. That's where they're coming from. To me, I'm on the outside looking in. I don't have access to the books. And no. I'm looking at it going, well, how in the world are you going to make a fortune with nobody in the stands and nobody buying $10 hot dogs and, you know, $15 beers? Tell me.
And that's, I mean, the players are probably looking at it. They're like, like for some of the teams like Tampa, we don't have fans anyways.
Yeah,
What's he talking about cutting costs?
Right. Exactly. There's nobody there.
Like the laughingstock of the league. We only have like 500 people in our stadium.
When your ticket promotion is buy two, get 25 free, I mean, it's kind of like, wow.
Yeah, wasn't that the Padres did that?
The Padres had that plan where you spend like a certain amount of money, you get to go to like all these games.
Until they win.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. All right. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. If you have a comment on that, you can also hit us up at 1-800-224-2004. All right. We'll talk more about the baseball throughout the show today, but I also want to get to the NFL because there's news about one running back who's going down the road of other running backs, and I wonder where it's going to end up. That's next on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call, SB Nation Radio. When your battery goes dead, everything could come to a stop, so don't take a chance on getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Keep your car on the road, getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. All right, so we were talking about Major League Baseball, and there is no plan to come back anytime soon. And the clock is ticking. Tick, tick, tick. If they want to get something done, like something... I do worry about this with baseball, in that if you come back for like some 48-game dash to the finish, it's just going to feel really like really weird. It's like, why don't you just randomly draw 8 teams out of a hat and just go right to the playoffs? I mean, 48 games, we're not going to feel like there's been a season. It's just going to feel like there's just this intense, abbreviated run to the end. You won't have a rhythm to the season. Anything like that. It'll just be a push to get to the playoffs, and it'll feel really tainted. But at the same time, I also think on the flip side, when the union says we'll just cram 114 games into this window, that doesn't feel right either. Like, that doesn't feel good either. Like, where we're doing playing every day and doubleheaders and like every other Monday off. Like that doesn't, like, it feels like that's just too much. 76 seems about right. 82 would have been better. But 76 seems to be, all right, that seems okay. But this time, every day that goes by without any sort of movement is a day that's lost. And if they don't want to play in November and December, you're either going to get two things out of this deal: a very, very short season that is very quick, or you're going to get no season at all.
I mean, part of the best thing about baseball is the fact of certain teams really start to mesh well after 50 games.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, I saw something that was like a list of things, like after last year, you know, certain things after the first 50 games of the season. You know, players who won the batting title were only batting like one something because they were still trying to find their rhythm. But the one that stood out the most in my mind were the Giants and the Nationals after 50
right.
games
Remember
last
that?
Year.
Yep.
The Giants were, I think, 30-19. Nationals were 19-30. And then the second half of the season, complete opposite teams.
Yep.
One
definitely. Especially the Nats.
Yeah, especially the Nats. They went on to win the World Series. And if we base that off of 50 games, there's no chance they make it.
Yeah, and it's one of the cool things. I know I've said this in a number of different contexts, but that's one of the reasons why I like it when the head guy on the team is called a manager rather than a coach, because he manages a season. He manages a long body of work. right? He's making sure players are in the right spot. Oh, we put you in the 7 spot, we'll move you up to the 4 spot. Now you're playing really well, or we'll move you down to the 3, you know, down to the 6 spot from the 3. Or the pitching rotation, let's shore that up. Or this guy's struggling a little bit, let's move him to mid relief. Like, you're taking all of this season and all of the ups and downs, the dog days of summer, and you're sort of saying, okay, I'm trying to put together the best unit that I can, especially if you're a team that's going to the postseason. You've got a lot of body of work. You've managed that body of work. You've made sure that everybody's in the right place where you want them before you go to the playoffs. You know, 48 games, a run to the finish line where you are so concerned about winning every single game rather than, because you know in baseball you lose 50 games, right? But you get value from losing those games, right? I mean, think about how many times a position player has to pitch in a wasted game because it's like, we're not blowing any more arms in the bull, you know, in the bullpen. I've got a road trip coming up, so the first baseman's going to pitch because I'm not bringing in more arms in this wasted. We're down 11-2, so that happens. That happens enough times to make you go, look, teams are content with losing a certain percentage of games, but they still gain value from losing those games, right? Because they know that, okay, we're on this 5-game losing skid, but why are we on this 5-game losing skid? Well, I got to change the lineup a bit, or I got to move a guy out, or this pitcher's really struggling. We got to use him less. And it all is information that good teams use so that they, when they get to the playoffs, they don't make those same mistakes twice. When you have a 48-game dash to the finish, the managerial part changes. Now it becomes, look, win at all costs because we're not going to get an opportunity to make up for this loss down the road. So then I think that would be a struggle for a lot of managers to sort of go, all right, how do I get the best team as quickly as possible in 48 games so we can make the playoffs? Rather than, I got plenty of time to figure out what my team is, we're good enough to make the playoffs, and when we do get to the playoffs, we are the best unit we can, we are the best team we can, because we've gone through the ups and downs of knowing what works and what doesn't. And, you know, look, I mean, in the end, is baseball great? You know, is it sport? Fine. But to get a shortened season for no other reason than these two sides just can't hammer things out is silly.
Yeah.
Absolutely silly.
I mean, it's taking that thing where we always talk about that, you know, baseball's a marathon, not a sprint. Now we're turning it, we're flipping it.
Yeah.
Like, that's all right, baseball, you got to be a sprint. Figure out everything you need to figure out that you normally figure out in 162 game season. Now figure it out in 50.
Right. Exactly.
Good luck.
And now this whole idea of not being able to take care of players, not being able to be liable if players catch coronavirus, where they can prove that they caught coronavirus through your lack of safety concerns. If we talked about star players sitting out, right? Saying, look, I'm not doing a 48 game schedule. If you were to make a silent protest on this as a star player, you could do it as a cover of, I'm a high risk. My family has, you know, members in the family that are high risk. So I'd rather not, rather than saying, I'm not doing it because monetarily this didn't work out for us and I'm taking a stand in favor of my union. You could do that. There might be players that do that. But in the end, that angle of seeing the megastars, the Bryce Harpers, the Mike Trouts, the megastars sitting out, I don't think you'll have that many. I don't think you probably won't have any at all. I think the union is going to make it very clear to the owners that clause, that liability clause has to go. And I think the owners will capitulate on that. Monetarily, I have no idea when they come together. None. Zero. Because that doesn't make it. There's just no movement.
I mean, one side isn't budging at all. The other side is just throwing out arbitrary numbers just because.
Yeah, just because. That's it.
There's no reason for them to come and go, about 76 games, 75%. No, how about, let's do 50 games, 81%.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to start getting just ridiculous numbers sent out that make no sense.
You hear this a lot in contract negotiations where you might get a little bit what you want, and then there's this one little caveat in there that you go, oh, come on, I'm not doing that. No, no, no. They're like, yeah, we'll give you, we're coming up to like 90% of what your asking price is, but by the way, you got to work Saturdays and Sundays. And you're like, no, 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 I'm not doing that. And then you know, this is what Major League Baseball is going to end up doing. They're going to get closer and closer to the money line, but they want to keep that liability clause in there, and the union's going to go, that's the deal breaker. When this hit my desk and I saw that, I'm sending it right back. I don't care all these economics. You wasted your time putting all these numbers together. All right, coming up, does Dalvin Cook deserve some money? We'll talk about that next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, 800-224-2004 is the number if you want to hit us up. You can also hit us up on Twitter if that's where you want to go, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. So Minnesota Vikings running back Dalvin Cook wants to get paid. He is heading into the final year of his rookie contract. He was the catalyst of the Minnesota Vikings offense last year. He had been injured for a lot of his first couple of years, where he had missed about 29 games in the first 3 years of his time in Minnesota. But last season was extremely important to their 10-6 run. And now he wants to get paid. He's scheduled to make $1.3 million. He is threatening to hold out. He's threatening not to show up to any sort of virtual meetings or any sort of camp when camp does eventually open for the Minnesota Vikings, and whether or not he'll get paid. So this leads to the conversation. And we just got done talking about this with Major League Baseball, which is negotiations, right? If you set yourself in the sand and concrete, if you locked yourself in, well, the negotiations are going to go one way. If you sort of give a little bit, take a little bit, et cetera, then things get done. Where is the value for Dalvin Cook for the Vikings, right? Well, it's not going to be Christian McCaffrey money, but do you sense, and this is a little bit closer to home for you, do you sense this is more of a Melvin Gordon thing? Where you threaten. You do have a history of being hurt, but you did have a very good season, and the offense for the Vikings was centered around you. I mean, the latest one of the statistics that was pointed out was about 47% of its offensive snaps were designed run plays centered around Dalvin Cook, who took 38% of the snaps from scrimmage last season. So it's important. But as Melvin Gordon found out, running backs get screwed in this. I mean, it's too bad, but they just do, right? Not everybody can be Christian McCaffrey or Ezekiel Elliott. Sometimes you get a Melvin Gordon, we end up with nothing. You don't get what you want.
Yeah, I feel like this is going the same way as Melvin.
I think I do too.
Yeah, go ahead and hold out. I mean, you know the other problem is this is probably a bad year to hold out for a contract negotiation.
I know, that's true.
Because I mean, right now, if you're going to do this to the owners right now, it's very easy for them to say, "Hey, we're not going to have fans. Where do you think the revenue's coming from? Just TV?" He's like, "I got to pay this guy, this guy, this guy." I guarantee Kirk Cousins his entire contract.
I know, and Cook is, again, when you're a running back, you get into this league and you get these rookie deals, and there's got to be a level of stress, right? Because you know, if you're a quarterback and the franchise is going to center around you, the payday is coming, and the payday is going to come quicker than when you hit your last year of your rookie deal, right? Because they're going to want to lock you in and make sure you're the quarterback long term. Dak Prescott's kind of going through that right now, right? But Patrick Mahomes is set to break the market. When you're a running back, it's got to be like, well, even if I have a good year, they never pay you for what you did. They pay you for what you're going to do, right? So they look at it as, wait a minute, how much cap room do I have? And am I going to lock that up? Am I going to use that up on a running back? Right. And in Dallas's case for Ezekiel Elliott, they able to come to a very nice deal for Zeke. Christian McCaffrey has now set the record for running backs. But Christian McCaffrey is a versatile player that does a number of things offensively for them. You know, Dalvin Cook was an integral part of the Vikings offense. No doubt about it. But it doesn't mean that the Vikings offense has to run around Dalvin Cook, right? It doesn't mean that that has to be the case. So when you're a running back, you have to find your value. And unfortunately, even when you threaten to hold out, like the Steelers weren't going to do anything with Le'Veon Bell, no matter how much Le'Veon Bell was important to them, they weren't going to do anything with them. And now he's a Jet. And if you're Dalvin Cook, if you threaten to hold out, if you threaten to say, "I'm not going to play this upcoming season," due to the new collective bargaining agreement, you don't get a year accrued on your time. So you become a restricted free agent in 2020, which means you could end up with the Vikings anyway. And you could end up seeing what the value of your services are matched by what the Vikings will pay you. And you could end up with the Vikings if you don't see the value on the open market. And I think that's where he's got to be really careful, because it's not that the league doesn't value, you know, won't value his services. They're not going to value his services to the level that he wants. He's not going to get McCaffrey money, but he could land somewhere around, you know, middle of the road, 11 million a year. What about maybe 13? That might seem more reasonable. But, you know, they don't have a lot of wiggle room. I mean, they just gave Kirk Cousins a ton of money, right? So, again, if you're Kirk Cousins, or at least the Vikings, and you look at Kirk Cousins and you say, well, all right, so much of the offense was centered around Dalvin Cook, but we just gave you a two-year contract extension with $66 million. So how about this? How about the offense revolves more around you? How's that? And they can you running back by committee. That's always the threat. Then in the end, whatever yardage you accrue from scrimmage, if they can go, look, if we can get that from a variety of different backs, then your value goes down, right? Whereas we're not throwing six quarterbacks out there to throw the football all season to get the same level as what you're, you know, what a certain quarterback does. If you're a quarterback that produces, and you're going to get paid. If you're a running back that produces, well, we'll see. And that's kind of where running backs are. Quarterbacks were the stars. Running backs were as equally the star, right? I mean, when I was younger, running backs were huge. And we've gone to a more passing offense, and now we find out that a lot more people can run the ball. You don't have to lock in so much of your money on that position. And it's too bad, because that's the position where if you're 30 and you're approaching, you know, you're running back, it's not exactly the best time to be cashing out. So Dalvin Cook is 24. This is the window of time to make the kind of money he's always dreamed about. Not that $1.3 million is anything to sneeze at, but I mean, if you've trained and worked out and you knew you could make it to the NFL and you make it to the NFL, you're not thinking about making $1.3 million. You're thinking about making $15 million, right? That's always been, you know, the financial goal. But you spent all of your time training in a position that seems to get devalued almost yearly by this league. But doesn't mean you can't cash out. Look, we've seen it happen. But it also means that there's a limit to that cash out. And missing 29 games in the first 3 years of your career does have a question mark. And it also makes people, here's the thing, because NFL fans are kind of savvy with this, with these numbers, it also makes fans go, well, I'm glad you did what you did last year for us, but you are injury prone, and I don't want to see my team use their allotment of cap space locking in a running back that's got this kind of injury history, even if you're never injured again. Right. So that's what he's up against. He's up against a history where he's not exactly the healthiest back. He is coming off a fantastic season. He is coming off a year where he was very important to the offense of the Vikings. Those are two things going in his favor. But what's not going in Dalvin Cook's favor is the fact that the Vikings have a tight cap to begin with. And also the league just doesn't put a lot of emphasis on locking up your running back as soon as you can.
Running backs nowadays, I mean, unless you become exceptional, what, 3 years, 4 years maybe?
Yeah, that's there's your window.
I mean, that's it.
Yeah, there's
your window. 3-4 years, and that, I mean, that's all the time you have to really make your money, unless you come out. I mean, the only person I can really think of that kind of bucked the trend right now is Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
Peterson was able to really cash.
Yeah, I mean, but I feel like he was the last one. I know we've had others, like Frank Gore has been a journeyman and is still playing. You have someone like Le'Veon Bell, who, you know, arguably was probably the best back in the league, and the team didn't want him.
Right. Yep, the team found another way to go around.
Yeah, he ended up sitting out an entire season.
Yep. And I know that was a big
debate. Toyed with your heart, Tony.
Yeah, I know. It was a big debate in Pittsburgh because he not only was a good back, he was a really good blocking back, too. I mean, he really kind of set up other things for them. But the Steelers didn't want to play the game. They said, no, we're not going to be locking up that kind of money in that position.
Yeah. I mean, this is the type of year, I mean, I implore all the athletes, guys, don't do contract negotiations this year. Just, you know,
yeah,
table it. Wait till next year.
It does feel a little weird, right?
I mean, unless you are going to be a free agent, like, say, like a Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott, you have every right to try to find the next contract because that's your livelihood. But, I mean, if you have, like, another 2 years on your deal, if you even have 1 year on your deal, just play it out and just say, okay, you know what, next year I'll probably be in a better position.
Yeah, but if you're Dalvin Cook, this is probably where he's like, all right, if I'm ever going to cash out, now's right, the time to cash just, out. Like, I was a very big part of the success of this football team.
If
next year I'm not 38% of the touches, if next year I'm not part of 47% of all offensive snaps, then what kind of bargaining power do I have?
I know, but I mean, I look at it this way. Maybe, you know, this season, you might only have four games in the NFL. We don't know yet.
Yeah, it's true. That is true. We don't know what the season's going to look like.
There's a second wave coming, apparently.
Yeah.
Because COVID is, obviously, COVID is obsolete now.
Do you think the NFL owners tell the Major League Baseball owners to shut up about that fact?
Yeah.
Like, every day in the press, you're saying we can't have baseball going into November and December because of this second wave. We would like it if you not talk about that second wave so much.
Keep that on the down low right
now. You wouldn't mind.
How about this? How about you let us bring it up?
Right. Yeah. How about that? The last thing I need is Joe Buck in November going, why are we even here at Lambeau when the whole nation is going? Like, we don't need that. We don't need that.
Pumped in crowd noise.
Whole nation going through a second wave, and yet here we are. It's Packers-Bears on Fox.
Because you need it.
Right? Players are completely at risk here, but don't you worry, America. You got your football.
Vegas lost a ton of money. They're trying to make it all back with
exactly.
you with this game.
Well, America will be like, shut up and play. We don't care.
Yeah.
No, you know, don't start whining us about a second wave. Shut up and play. We've been dying for this all season. 2020 has been a mess. It's crazy. I kind of agree with you, though. If we weren't in Corona, this would be like a legitimate conversation. It feels weird that we're in this time where we have so much uncertainty. And, you know, if you're going up for a contract negotiation at a time where you're like, we're not even like, how many games are we going to play? We don't even know. Like,
I don't even know.
We're trying to lock you into a contract under salary cap numbers. We're not even sure what the season is going to look like.
I mean, the NFL has had the benefit of being able to stick to their game plan schedule the entire time. They haven't had to waver once. They've had to change it. They've had to alter it a little bit. You know, no live draft. It was all virtual. Turned out to be a great success, probably because we were starved for anything. But they haven't had to alter their schedule once. And now we're getting into preseason where they're more likely going to be able to open up training camps on time, and have a preseason schedule because it just feels that that's the way America is rolling right now. But, you know, we are looking at late October. We are looking at November, December, when the flu season starts up again. Where are we going to be with coronavirus at that point?
Yeah, exactly. And that's a good point, because all these other sports that we've been talking about, baseball, basketball, hockey, they've had to make decisions on the fly, having the coronavirus affect them, right? Baseball was in spring training, getting ready for a late March start, right? Basketball and hockey were already in the season heading towards their playoffs. They had to make these kind of decisions. They had to react to it. They had to come up with something while we're in quarantine to see if they wanted to return. Football didn't have to do that. Football had its combine, and then at this period of time, and then they realized the draft could be done virtually. You're right. There has been no real major decision by the NFL in terms of what 2020 is going to look like for them. But as we get closer and closer to August and training camp, July and training camp, those decisions are going to have to be made. Then they're going to figure this out, right? Start on time, but what if there's a second wave October 10th?
Yep.
Right? What if there's a second wave in early November? Now, Goodell and the league is going to have to be forced in the same situation as these other sports were, which is, what do we do? Do we have the protocol in place to say we can survive it, or do we have to shut down, or what we're going to do? Then, you know, the decisions are going to come later. They don't have to come today. So it can feel like business as usual when you're talking about a Dalvin Cook's decision to say, look, I won't come to camp, or I won't come to virtual meetings, or I won't do anything. Anything that you're going to do, whether it's virtual or not, I won't participate until I get a contract negotiation. But those decisions and what the season is going to look like are coming down the road. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's as we continue along. Coming up, a happy anniversary to one of the bigger moments in sports history. That's next.
Tony D and Ron Culver continues now. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, so this state has a kind of a some special anniversary feel to it. If you're an NBA fan, if you grew up in the 80s with the Lakers Celtics, this is the baby skyhook game where Magic Johnson hit the little baby skyhook in game four at Boston Garden. If you grew up during that time like I did and you were kind of fascinated by that series, one of the things that you always worried about was losing on your home court. It was very difficult to win at the Forum. If you were a late Celtics fan, it happened, but it was hard to do. And it was hard to win at Boston Garden. Boston Garden was an older building, and they kind of messed around with, like, the heat. You know, like, it would be hot in there, and, like, it was really kind of a mess. But if you could steal a game, it could change a series. And the Lakers went on to win that series in six games, but the baby skyhook game in 1987. But this 47 years ago, I think, was one of the more important moments in sports history, at least one of the most dominating performances in sports history, and that was Secretariat's run at the Belmont, which goes, if you've never seen it, just YouTube it. It's one of the most incredible horse racing feats you'll ever see, how dominant Secretariat won. He won by nearly 83 yards. I mean, like, how it's unreal to see a horse leave the pack. Like, dominate. Like, you think when, like, somebody, you know, if a horse wins, there's usually one horse that's kind of hanging around. He may be faster than the group, but there's like one or two that are kind of trained with them. But this was different. This was Secretariat leaving everybody a football field behind en route to the Triple Crown. It's a dominating performance by a horse. The reason I bring it up is if you remember when we headed into 2000, ESPN did like its 100 greatest athletes of the last century. Secretary was in the top 10. He's not even a person, but he was in the top 10 because he was his place in sports history needs to be recognized. And on this date in 1973, he won the Belmont in 2 minutes and 24 seconds, winning the Triple Crown.